This is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. It's estimated that about 50 million people worldwide have Alzheimer's disease, 5.5 million of those in the U.S., and those numbers will only grow as our population ages. There's currently no cure and relatively few drugs available to treat Alzheimer's, but researchers are continuing to look, and a new report from the Alzheimer's Drug Discovery Foundation says there are 126 different medications in some stage of clinical trials. Joining me now to talk through what some of those drugs are and what they might be able to do is Rudy Tanzi. He's the Joseph P. and Rose F. Kennedy Professor of Neurology at Harvard Medical School, Vice Chair of Neurology Research, and Director of the Genetics and Aging Research Unit at Massachusetts General Hospital. Rudy, welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Let's talk about the drugs that we currently have. These aren't typically drugs that actually address the underlying cause of the disease. These are kind of drugs that can slow the progression or treat some of the associated symptoms, right?
Yeah, many of us like to say that the current Alzheimer's drugs out there, Aricept, Namenda, Exelon, are better than nothing. They treat more of the symptoms by helping to get the most out of your brain cells while the damage and devastation continues. So they're not stopping the disease process, but they're helping to enhance learning and memory, which is most impacted by the disease.
Well, Science Magazine earlier this year, in a story about the failure of some new Alzheimer's drugs in clinical trials, wrote that no significant new drug for Alzheimer's has been approved in the past 14 years. What makes it so hard to find a treatment and develop a treatment for this disease?
Well, two things. One is that the main target right now is the material that makes up the plaque, the beta amyloid. These plaques accumulate outside of the nerve cells, and then are toxic to the nerve cells and cause things called tangles inside the nerve cells. And then this leads to cell death, and then inflammation occurs in the brain, and then you really get a lot of cell death that leads to dementia. And in targeting amyloid, it's a good idea. All the genetics that I have carried out over the past 30 years and others say amyloid is the best target for nipping this disease in the bud. But every amyloid trial has failed, and which failure is defined by not improving cognition. In other words, we didn't allow people to have better memories or learn better. We didn't treat the symptoms very well with drugs that targeted amyloid. But now we know the reason why. And the reason why is that amyloid is accumulating in the brain a decade or so before the symptoms. And by the time you get the symptoms of the disease, the amyloid is too late to hit. And so I wouldn't say amyloid is the wrong target. It's just you have to treat it at the right time, meaning we have to detect who has high amounts of amyloid in their brain and then start bringing those levels down a decade or so before symptoms might arise. So that's one thing. The other thing is we do need more targets, because besides amyloid, there are, as I mentioned, the tangles that kill the nerve cells. But the big killer is inflammation. The brain, you know, has a defense system, and it sees all these nerve cells dying because of plaques and tangles. And then inflammation is the attempt of the brain to kind of clean out the area. But with that, you get a lot of friendly fire, so to speak, and many, many more nerve cells die. So inflammation is probably the best target for those who already have the disease, whereas stopping the amyloid and the tangles is something you want to do before the symptoms, since that triggers the disease.
You mentioned needing to figure out who has the extra high levels of these beta amyloid plaques or amyloid protein in general, but we don't have still a definitive diagnosis for Alzheimer's until after death. How much of an impediment is just the diagnosis phase to finding or at least implementing an effective treatment for this disease?
Well, you know, in terms of definitive diagnosis, there are a combination of things that can be done that are just about definitive. So if you see a lot of amyloid in the brain by imaging, there's also a test that can be done on spinal fluid, you know, not everybody's favorite thing, a lumbar puncture, spinal tap, but you can look for the proteins that make up the plaques and the tangles in the spinal fluid and get even a better idea of whether somebody has Alzheimer's. And then combine that with just the standard, you know, neuropsychiatric testing, the cognitive testing, the combination of those allow for a pretty good and definitive diagnosis, even though, you know, the final confirmation would come from an autopsy of the brain. But I think that right now, you know, given that we can detect amyloid in the brain by imaging, we have to remember that health insurance doesn't cover that amyloid plaque imaging because it's not what they say is actionable. In other words, if you're positive for plaque in your brain by imaging the brain, there's not a drug you can take right now that will take that amyloid back down. But many drugs are in trials. Now, here's the big problem. The FDA wants us to show that amyloid-lowering drugs make people cognitively better, that it improves memory and learning. But the problem is that's probably not going to happen, or if it happens, you have to get really lucky. Maybe if you start with very early-stage patients, like a lot of trials are doing. I think that there's enough data now that say amyloid triggers this disease from genetics, from what we call our Alzheimer's in a dish model, where we grow mini human brain organoids in a dish and see how the pathology occurs in time. I think it's enough to say if we have a safe drug that lowers amyloid, you know, the way, let's say, a statin lowers cholesterol, that when somebody's diagnosed with high amounts of amyloid in their brain on a brain imaging test, let them take that drug. And don't hold the bar so high that we have to show that same drug makes you cognitively better. This is a drug you'd use way before symptoms to stop the disease process.
You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. I'm talking with Rudy Tanzi, neurologist at Harvard Medical School and MGH, about new Alzheimer's treatments. As you mentioned, there are a number of new drugs in clinical trials. In fact, this new report says 126. Given that we haven't seen any successful significant new drugs for Alzheimer's in a number of years, does that seem like a big number, a big enough number to perhaps hold out some hope that we will get something new and useful out of these?
Well, it's a good size number, and luckily we're beginning to see a lot of different types of targets, right? So the bulk of drugs are still targeting the amyloid, and I think that's fine, but we have to remember it's not just targeting amyloid in a patient. You have to do that before symptoms for that to matter. It's kind of like if somebody has a heart attack and they have congestive heart failure, you wouldn't just give them a Lipitor and say, here, this is all you need, right? You needed to keep your cholesterol down 10 years before to try to reduce the risk for heart disease. That's how you have to treat amyloid. So that's for that class of drug. But luckily, there are many other drugs that are being developed that maybe can help patients who already have symptoms, as well as help stave off the disease and those who are at risk. These are drugs that try to protect the nerve cells from the onslaught of amyloid and tangles and inflammation. Others are trying to stop the inflammation itself. Others are trying to stop the tangles from spreading through the brain, because once you get these tangles in the nerve cells, they spread kind of like brush fires. I like to say amyloid is like the match, and the tangles are like the brush fires, and you can live with them for a long time. But once those brush fires turn into a forest fire, and that's the inflammation, that's when you go downhill. And so for these amyloid trials, you know, you're trying to put out a forest fire by blowing out the match. But we do have other drugs that we're seeing in trials that do try to hit the forest fire. They try to stop the inflammation, or they try to protect the nerve cells from the inflammation. So those other targets are growing, but we need to see more of that. And in combination, we need to realize that together as a group, FDA, patients, docs, all have to start treating amyloid before the symptoms. And if we have a safer drug that does that, I do hope that they'll allow us to do that.
It sounds like what in the end might be most effective, and this is something we see certainly in cancer treatment, is some combination of all those different drugs, right? That you're stopping amyloid and you're inhibiting inflammation, that you would want to hit this disease. It's so devastating. You would want to hit it with a few different things. Do we need to wait, I guess, for these drugs to come through the FDA approval process individually before researchers can start looking at what they might be able to do in combination?
I mean, you're absolutely right. A cocktail in the end is going to win the day. Whether it's prevention before symptoms or treating patients, you'd want to hit all the three pillars of pathology, the plaques, the tangles, and the inflammation in the brain. You can do combination trials, and many are already thinking about doing combinations for hitting the amyloid. But you can also think about hitting the amyloid and the tangles at the same time. You can think about hitting inflammation and amyloid. One lucky thing is that some of the drugs that are targeted to inflammation that we and others are developing would have a dual mechanism. As soon as you stop the inflammation, those same drugs will actually promote the clearance of the amyloid. So it's just the way it works in the brain is these little cells in the brain called microglia are the cells that both clean up the amyloid, but in their other state, they can cause the inflammation. So it turns out if you can find a drug that stops the inflammation, you can also get those cells simultaneously to start clearing up more of the amyloid plaque from the brain. So that's a big goal now of our lab and other labs. And back in 2008, the Cure Alzheimer's Fund had funded our Alzheimer's Genome Project, and we found the main gene that triggers that switch from, the housekeeping and clearing of amyloid to the inflammation. And now that gene called CD33 is a big target across labs and also in pharma for trying to get that inflammation down and simultaneously clear the amyloid.
I'm talking with neurologist Rudy Tanzi of Harvard University and MGH about developing new treatments for Alzheimer's disease. When you're thinking about drugs that might be useful for fighting inflammation in the brain, we have a lot of drugs already for fighting inflammation. And in fact, about a third of the drugs that are currently somewhere in clinical trials for Alzheimer's are actually drugs that were approved for other purposes and are being tried now with Alzheimer's. Does that potentially mean that we could have Alzheimer's drugs sooner if they've already been used for some other purpose?
Yes, so there are two questions there, right? One is, will drugs that already hit inflammation in the body be useful in the brain? And so far, we've seen that answer is no. Just taking a drug that you would not use for a sore muscle or inflammation in your body, let's say ibuprofen or a steroid, we haven't seen standard inflammation drugs working in Alzheimer's. We need to be more clever. There's a company I've been involved with helping called AZ Therapies, for example, that has they're using a repurposed asthma drug called Cromolyn because it seems to tame the neuroinflammation in the brain. It hits those cells I mentioned earlier, the microglia. So we just need to be more clever. And I think there is a role for repurposed drugs. I mean, I think AZ Therapies trial is a good example of that. Just for conflict purposes, I'm the head of their SAB and financially involved with that company, but I just wanted to use them as an example. But we also, in our what's called Alzheimer's in a Dish, where we create a mini human brain organoid that's creating plaques, and then we can see the plaques cause the tangles in that dish, and that whole process takes about 8 weeks. We tested all of the approved drugs in the U.S. to see if any of them stop the plaques and tangles. We found 38 different drugs. This was, again, a Cure Alzheimer's Fund-supported project. 38 different drugs that actually stop the plaques and the tangles. And now we're planning clinical trials. We have a new center at Mass General that will be doing Alzheimer's trials, and we're going to take these repurposed drugs and start doing those trials. Because pharmaceutical companies are not going to be interested in doing a trial with a repurposed drug, especially if it's already generic. But we can do that in academia and get it funded by foundations like Cure Alzheimer's Fund or the NIH, and this is a part of our plan.
My guest is Rudy Tanzi of Harvard University and MGH. We're talking about developing new Alzheimer's treatments. I'm still stuck on what you said a couple of minutes ago, that you can create a Alzheimer's brain organoid in a dish, like a miniature brain that actually gets Alzheimer's. It sounds, for one, just amazing, but then sounds like a really great tool for screening really broadly a whole lot of different drugs. How many chemicals or molecules or potential treatments might be just shy of clinical trials at this point through that kind of testing in academia that you were talking about?
Right. When we were using mouse models, we had a big issue, right? In mice, the plaques don't lead to tangles. In fact, that led to so much confusion about whether amyloid plaques caused the disease. And many of us, like myself, argued, well, we're not 150-pound mice, okay? We're humans. So a very talented person in our group, Doo-Yeon Kim, was able to take stem cells, human stem cells, turn those into nerve cells, and then the trick was to grow them in a gel, because the brain's like jello, it's not liquid, And we made the mistake in the past of growing cells just in liquid media in a dish, in a petri dish. If you grow it in a gel-like matrix, like Jell-O, and you have all the essential proteins and nutrients in there like you would have in the brain, then those nerve cells actually talk to each other. They form neural networks. They fire. And if you then put the Alzheimer's genes in those nerve cells that make amyloid, now you stop producing amyloid in the dish, and in 6 weeks you see plaques in the dish. You wait another 2 weeks, and then the nerve cells that are in contact with those plaques make tangles. So this has now revolutionized drug screening. It's made it 10 times cheaper, 10 times faster. The caveat is, you know, it's not an animal. It's a dish. But you can at least find drugs and compounds that stop the plaques and thus the tangles. Or some of them actually stop the tangles even though the plaques are still there. So, you know, remember, the plaques are leading to the tangles, so you can hit either one. So we have about 38 drugs like that that came out of that screen. This is something called the 3DDS, because we call these 3D cell cultures. And Cure Alzheimer's Fund started the three-dimensional drug screening program, and that's where this came from. So we're hoping to now move those into trials over the next year or two.
With 126 drugs that are currently in clinical trials, more, as you were just saying, soon hopefully to be going into clinical trials, but then on the flip side of that, a history of failed clinical trials for new Alzheimer's drugs. How optimistic are you that we will find a treatment and eventually a cure for this disease?
To be honest, I've never been more optimistic. I don't take failure as a black and white event or a binary event. You have to always look at the details, and you have to get granular to really do the right science and do the right medical research. And I think for the amyloid plaques that get the most attention in trials, it's very clear now that you cannot take a patient with full-blown Alzheimer's disease and hit their plaques and expect to make them cognitively better or stop their dementia. You have to hit plaques 10 years before symptoms, or at least 5 years before, very early on. And that with that realization, it explains why many of the trials failed. All the trials for amyloid failed. Some of them failed because the drugs weren't very good. But there were some drugs that were pretty good that still failed. And it's because it's too little too late. So when we talk about precision medicine, it's right patient, right drug, right time. So I'm optimistic that we'll have a safe drug that stops the amyloid. The question is, will the FDA play along and allow us to use that early on as opposed to having to show that a drug like that makes someone better, right? I mean, a big problem is we don't diagnose Alzheimer's until you have symptoms, right? Imagine if we did that in cancer. Imagine if it wasn't enough to know you have a small tumor forming with no symptoms at all of cancer. You didn't even know you had it. And then they said, well, we're not going to diagnose your cancer until you have symptoms, meaning organ failure and a large tumor. No one would live. And imagine if the FDA said, okay, now show your tumor suppressor drug is going to make someone better who already has organ failure with a 2-inch tumor. That's essentially what they're making us do by trying to make amyloid drugs make people better, because amyloid is the beginning of the disease before symptoms. And this is the mindset we have to affect if we're going to make progress. So on one hand, I'm optimistic we will have safe drugs that hit amyloid. On the other hand, I'm concerned that we'll get the go-ahead with the FDA to say, let's use that early on and do trials that simply show you're moving amyloid and that's enough. I'm also optimistic because we have many other therapies in trials, and we have now an understanding of how neuroinflammation occurs in the brain. In fact, we found over a dozen different genes over the last several years, all of which teach us how inflammation occurs in the brain. And working from those genes, we can come up with new drugs. Many of them are not even trials yet. And I think that's how we're going to help patients with symptoms of the disease, is hit the neuroinflammation. And the good news is at least we have the gene targets to do that now, thanks to worldwide efforts.
That's Rudy Tanzi. He's the Joseph P. and Rose F. Kennedy Professor of Neurology at Harvard Medical School, Vice Chair of Neurology, and Director of the Genetics and Aging Research Unit at Massachusetts General Hospital. Rudy, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Up next, Boston's Museum of Science is asking visitors some provocative questions and getting some interesting results. Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.